It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, and today we're joined by Utah activist Ken Akers, LaShawn Williams, she's a professor of social work at Salt Lake Community College, and entertainer and entrepreneur Maoli Bonner, and we have a lot to talk about. Some crazy stuff's been going on in our society today, and I will say that this is probably the first time, and maybe it's not, but I feel like it's the first time we've had four black people in the studio.
Did we max out the quota?
I'm pretty sure we have, because there's no more mics, so we have them all.
Here we go.
But we're going to be talking about some culturally sensitive information, but I do think it's going to be a great conversation. So if you've been under a rock somewhere, you may not know that Joe Rogan was talking out the side of his neck a lot the last couple of weeks. And particularly dropping the N-word bomb all over the place and just, I don't know, Lord help me, forgive me. I'm not even a religious person, but I'm amazed that the amount of misinformation and ignorance that can come out of people's mouths. However, I will give him credit for at least apologize. But then I want to start off the conversation, however, with Brad Wilcox. He is a youth leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And in Utah, it's a big deal. And with over 10 million members of the church around the world, it's still a big deal because he's talking to a lot of people. And this week, he said some, I don't know, what's the word, Maoli, how would you describe the words he was using during his fireside chat?
I'd probably say ill-informed and insensitive.
At the very least.
I'll go off to the races right here. I think it just comes from a supremacist standpoint. It's that superiority complex is where I'd put it.
Help me out with that.
So basically, you know, with his particular speech, he mentioned something about, you know, the blacks not having as long as a journey as us. And so that came from a superiority position.
That's fair. Okay. Because I feel as though I want to give this as much truth and information as possible. Okay, so here we go. He was asked, He was talking about why blacks in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints until 1978, black people were not allowed to have the priesthood.
With an asterisk next to that a little bit,
sure.
But go ahead. Yes.
Explain the asterisk, please.
So the asterisk is prior to 1978, there was a time period from 1830 until about 18-something or other. I'm blanking on the actual date. But let's not say 1864 because that's the Civil Rights,
the Civil War.
But there was a period in time when black people were ordained to leadership. We only have, you know, a couple of token people that we name, Elijah Abel.
So it was 1947 when Joseph Smith died.
1847. Yes, about 17 years from the organization of the church through the martyrdom of Joseph Smith, where black men were ordained to leadership in the priesthood, which allowed them to serve missions. We still could not enter temples, but we could serve missions. And so from about 1847 to 1978, it bolsters in a person's argument like Brad Wilcox, they didn't have to wait that long. We had to wait 1,829 years to get the priesthood. How come we had to wait that long? But, Bradley is talking, it's, you know, not in context because he was trying to make a point, which to the superiority piece, I agree.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that circles back around. You know, even with his apology, when he came back around with that, which, you know, he did apologize, you know, he was speaking about a particular subject. He was trying to position it, which he had no idea what to do.
Correct.
And so, therefore, he only walked into the conversation what he knew best.
Correct.
Back to the superiority.
To give some context, this is his speech in his fireside, and he says, now, sadly, you live in a time, he's speaking to the youth members, You live in a time where a lot of people get uptight about priesthood issues. One of the most glorious things we have in the church, and yet people want to sit and fight about it and get uptight about it. He said during his fireside. And he continued, I don't mean to oversimplify a complex issue. I sure think that we make it a lot harder than it needs to be, referencing the questions he received on this issue. So he says, maybe we're asking the wrong question. Maybe instead of saying, why did the blacks have to wait until 1978, maybe we should be asking, why did the whites and other races have to wait until 1829? 1,829 years they've waited. Why did the Gentiles have to wait until after the Jews? Why did everybody in the house of Israel except the tribe of Levi have to wait until? Hmm. So he uses this as his argument. But there are people who are listening to this, their mouths are agape. And then they're recording it, which I thought was interesting because this is how this came out. This isn't the first time he had said anything like
right,
this.
Right,
this is
right.
an ongoing issue. Channel 4 did a news report about it previously. So he has made missteps before and still had not learned from it. And then he makes an apology later on. His apology reads in part two, as I'm going to get to this. Wait a minute. Okay. I'm not doing that right. Let's go back here.
Which, mind you, this apology came out quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, let's give credit to, you know, I mean, we could drive the bus over this, but let's give credit to, you know, a lot of the individuals within the church, too.
That would actually bring it up.
Absolutely. That's from right. my position, you know, from the activist position, you know, I got a lot of white folks that are looking at us saying, hey, that wasn't right. And so, you know, they pushed back on this ordeal and they pushed back hard. And so that brought up the apology within that 24 hours.
His apology reads, my dear friends, I made a serious mistake last night and I'm truly sorry. The illustration I attempted to use about the timing of the revelation on the priesthood for black members was wrong. I reviewed what I said and I recognize that what I had hoped to express about trusting God's timing did not come through as intended. To those I offended, especially my dear black friends, I offer my sincere apologies and ask for your forgiveness. I am committed to do better.
So again, and I'm going to run with that one too, because here's the thing that I have a problem with in both perspectives. When he pedestals the apology too, he pedestals the apology as if it needs to be directed to the black community. You know, when he's in that position and he makes those arguments, or he's trying to position something in a sense that's making sense to him, he should apologize to himself. He should apologize to himself because he was uninformed about the ordeal. He took away from the part that he was speaking in an oppressive manner. And so he needed to correct that, even though it could have came off offensive, which the apology, you know, is coming across. But he needs to correct his manner, not the apology.
Molly, you heard it. What were your thoughts?
I mean,
and by the way, okay, so full disclosure, you and LaShawn, both members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day
Saints. Yes.
All my whole life.
Yeah. Mm, okay. So, I mean, initially hearing his remarks, I mean, I couldn't listen to it straight through.
Mm-hmm.
I had to stop, walk away. Mm-hmm. Stomach was tight. I'm like, am I about to throw up? Is this a physical reaction? Mm-hmm. And then going back, listen to another minute and a half. It was very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult. And I don't even think that he realizes what pain he caused by doing that, and what perpetual abuse is going to continue
mm-hmm.
when that message is put out, because I don't think he was speaking to black people.
No,
you know, in that message,
certainly not. He called us the blacks,
so
multiple times.
You know, and so
yeah, right, he did, and he said the whites even in his apology.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, the thing is, when you asked me how would I define it, and I said ill-informed, because I just have to believe that he didn't know what LaShawn was saying, that there were black priesthood holders, 1832, right. Black Pete, 1833, Joseph T. Ball. Like, there was black priesthood holders before 1978, so why did he tell them that?
But this is the thing. It complicates the thing that he was trying to say. He said, why did all of us have to wait until 1829? Now, here's the thing. Yeah, because all of us got in 1829. White women got the priesthood. Mm. Black men got the priesthood. So the question actually becomes, Brad, why did it stop? That's what he needed to address. And he thinks, why did black folk have to wait until 1978? Well, why did we have to wait again is the actual question. And his apology is garbage because he says, I was trying to explain that it was God's timing. God's timing restored the priesthood in 1829 to all.
Right.
Man's racism, white supremacy denied the priesthood to black people specifically from 1847 until 1978 and still allows leadership to perpetuate the issue of God's timing. It is not God's timing. People say all of the things happen on the Lord's clock. Well, we are the hands on the Lord's clock is what I've also heard. So if we're not making the moves to make changes, we can't keep blaming God. I think God might get a little bit upset about that. And I have seen some Old Testament stories when God got mad about stuff. I don't want to be on that side of God.
I want to
be on the nice Jesus side of God. That's what I would like to be. And so I need people to understand that his apology, it still doubles back on itself because he's continuing to lie, as you said, to himself, because he is, as you said, ill-informed.
Right.
Because you can't know the history and then still say everybody had to wait, white people had to wait. Because the thing is, white people had to wait longer than the blacks. That's what he's trying to say.
Yeah. Can I just address that real quick?
Go for it.
I just think that whole message in general to say that, what about white people having to wait as long as they wait? Imagine. White people are eating this full meal. Black people over here are starving. And we give them a little scrap. Give them a little scrap of food. They continue eating their feast for years and years and years. And then someone says, why do the black people have to wait before we can eat this big meal?
Right.
And he says, well, we didn't get our meal until... Like, that is the dumbest thing to validate when you started your feast while other people are starving.
We'll continue our discussion. I know we got a whole other segment, so I just want to keep us on time a little bit.
Absolutely.
By the way, love all of you. You don't know how proud and how just I'm so happy today. We will continue this discussion because there's so much more. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
We are back with the Loudmouth Project Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee. Today, I am joined by Ken Akers. He's a Utah activist, Professor LaShawn Williams, the Professor of Social Work at Salt Lake Community College, and Molly Bonner, who is kind of a renaissance man of entertainment and filmmaking. And what else do you do, man? It's like other than everything.
Music, whatever I got to do.
I'm real quick.
Yeah.
So we met on the phone
a
couple of years ago. And, you know, I just couldn't stop listening. He's just such an interesting person. And when I went to go see your film, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what to expect, right? But it was better than I expected, certainly. But I'm just amazed. It's still your first foray into that kind of thing. So again, it just speaks to your talent and your ambition. And I just think that's a wonderful thing.
I mentioned he's got this Tyrese thing looking.
He's got
the teeth. He's got the big
that's
smile.
So funny,
and everything.
That's so funny. What the film did in talking about Black history, the early Black pioneers and priesthood holders that Brother Wilcox didn't acknowledge in his statements were. So to your point, I work in music. I have right now. I'm writing with Stevie Wonder on his album, and we're talking. Right, but here's the thing: where in the world would I be talking to Stevie Wonder about the Mormon Church? And I don't mean that in the pejorative
right.
sense.
Right,
I'm
right,
saying,
sure.
you know, and we have spent hours talking about the gospel and beliefs because we're being transparent about the history instead of talking about the history.
Sure.
You know, so I just think it's so important for us to address the things from the past so that we can understand why we are where we are today.
Can we talk about the past a little bit? Let's talk about the language, though. I mean, things fit
in
harmony.
We're going to reset it. So Brad Wilcox, Brother Brad Wilcox, right? That's how he would be addressed. Mm-hmm. He is a leader in the church. He's a youth leader. So he basically speaks to millions of young members about the word and how to be a good Christian person.
Sure.
And yet, in his comments to them very recently, he used very pejorative language to reference people like ourselves, African American, well, blacks. I mean, because you could be from anywhere. But the idea, though, is that he referred to us as the blacks. He referred to whites as the whites, even. Mm. And he conflated how blacks were sidelined for a time, not allowing to ascend to the priesthood, and then tried to make it seem as though there was some comparison because of how long others, including white people, had to wait initially before there was even a church.
Yes.
So it was, again, very convoluted. It was beneath someone who considers himself to be a learned man, and certainly someone who considers themselves to be a leader to young people who they are supposed to aspire to be.
Sure.
And so you were saying, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, you're perfectly fine. I think, so we go back to the language. You know, we were talking about the has and the has not. You know, we speak about those things sometimes. And when you speak about individuals that say certain things in society against racism or racist mentality, you know, some of these folks will say things, you know, just as simple, just very as simple as BET or Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why do they get the Black History Month and we do not? Why do they get the BET channel and we do not? And so here we are, listen to, you know, Brother Wilcox. Why do they or why do we? And it's the same language that lines up for me.
It's other.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Right. It's the same language for me. And so, you know, as me being a black man, when I hear that, right, when I hear that language, it all lines up for me and it sends up every red flag and triggers everything. And my alert is on full blast. I'm paying attention to everything around me at that point. So that's what the problem that, you know, leads me down the path that leads me down. Excuse me.
LaShawn, I mean, you kind of broke it down, as succinctly as we could. You've heard this your life. I mean, both you guys, I'm not trying to tell everybody's age, but y'all
both of you
40.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Here we go.
So, you've had to deal with this for 40 years, being being a minority and a minority in a church.
Correct.
And it's a church. It's your life. I'm not a person of faith, but I understand how important one's faith is to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you've had to listen to the controversy all these years and then have someone who you know is in the hierarchy of your church just be as obtuse as he was, how did you take it, and how do you look to it and say, well, there's something more than this, and we can't allow this to, you know, demean what we know to be our true faith?
Oh, it was tough, because Brad Wilcox has written this book called The Continuous Conversion, and I have highlighted and underlined and circled and referenced and sent people paragraphs and quotes out of the book, because the man is so good with analogies. Mm. He's beautiful when he talks about the atonement and about the power of grace and how God can fill up every single gap and you don't have to do anything more than believe and try. He is fantastic with that. And I was like, now I got to burn the man's book. I was so upset.
Mm.
I was mad. I was like, I got to burn all of Brad's stuff. My friend was like, no. God can use imperfect people to do good work. And I was like, okay. I got to do a lesson on the Old Testament. I got to talk about Abraham and Lot. So I understand that God uses imperfect people, but it's like in 2022, and it's not even the imperfect people thing. It's the rhetoric that we have as the church and as a faith, is if you listen to your card-carrying member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you will hear language like we are the only true church. So if you are the only and you are restored and you are the only ones that has Christ at your head, how do you walk around saying crazy stuff
right.
that has been disavowed for almost 10 years, at least? At last check, 2013, the Race and the Priesthood essay disavowed much of the stuff that Brother Wilcox was saying. Disavowed it. So how are you, Brother Wilcox, in leadership of the worldwide church, and now you're going counter to the 2013 Race and the Priesthood essay, and then your apology continues to purport this notion of, I'm sorry, I was trying to articulate God's timing about being racist to all of y'all, but I used a bad example. But you said God was racist, and that's the wrong part.
Right. Mm.
So you can't even apologize in a more perfected way. So yes, he's an imperfect leader, room for grace, fine. What about accountability? Like, I want him to go back and read his book and be like, you know what, that continuous conversion and the grace, you better start asking for some extra measures for you because I expected you to know better and do better.
That seems like a loophole for me, though.
A loophole, how?
The forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I mean,
but aren't we all supposed to forgive?
No, I get it. But, you know, here we go. We talked about accolades earlier. You know, we talked about profound individuals and their stature, where they fit in society. You know, that kind of, those accidental mishaps should lessen. It should come to a peak. You know, when you're broadening and you're learning at the lower end of the spectrum, you have quite a few mistakes, and that's what sharpens your spear.
Mm-hmm.
When you get up to the top, they should be very few.
Right, you should have many fewer of those incidents.
Absolutely, right, absolutely.
So, well, but I mean, so and going back to your point, I'm shocked that you tell me that he is great at analogies.
Oh, he's so good.
He could not have been any worse.
Yeah. That
in
was
this
terrible.
Case.
Yeah.
And to me, like, I feel bad for other church members because this was their guy. He's supposed to, again, be a person who helps make young people feel like they love their faith, and they want to do the best they can to, you know, present it to everybody in the world. But he just literally submarined their efforts to a pretty large segment of the population on this earth, and, right. and certainly in America. So how do you – and Molly, we only got 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. But like, so how do you look at that and then somehow – You offer that grace. What would you like him? What would you like to see him do to redeem himself?
Oh wow! He would have to do what would make a lot of people upset, which is sit down with Black people
thank
of African
you.
Descent, and understand why it's painful. So I think the apology. Thank you so much for doing it so quickly. But now let's learn. So let's actually
right.
learn why. Because usually, especially since George Floyd. My white friends that do something, say something, and their quick response, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I'm like, but let's talk about why.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
otherwise,
right,
you're going
right.
to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that he wants to learn about why and the damage that it is. So when I was with the age of the kids in that class, in that fireside, when mm-hmm. I was their age, I was made to stand up in front of my seminary class. And they said,
so these are teenagers primarily.
This is, yeah,
mm-hmm.
14 years old. And the man, my teacher says, stand up. You see the color of your skin? You'll never see Christ.
Ooh.
He said that to you?
He would have saw Jesus oh, right then, the and
thing.
I would have been in jail.
So here's the thing. Oh, here's the thing. Because of the teachings that the people have questions about, the youth right now, so he said, you'll never see Christ. And it's because of the color of your skin and this and reason and can all these things that...
Broke it all down to you.
Yeah. And all these things that have been disavowed.
Yes.
But because there is not thorough acknowledgement of the pain and suffering and racism
that
causes
things-
people that live within the faith... Then instead you have someone who says, don't worry about them, worry
right.
about you. And that is so damaging.
Mm-hmm.
See, these are the things that need to be heard, though, because it's, again, the apology, right? The apology happens today, but the ripple effect is still rippling.
And that's, you got to apologize at some point.
Sure. But, I mean, you set the stone for others.
Right, right. Well, and again, I'm like you. I hear these things, and it hurts me to know that you had to hear that again.
Yeah,
it's something
absolutely.
That means so much to you, right? But... we always have to err on, A, not all people are bad, and even smart people do really, 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 really dumb things.
Fair
I'm
enough.
Not letting him off the hook, because what I heard was, as we've been talking about, this is something that's in him, and he has to deal with that.
Right.
He has to find it in himself to be better, not do better.
Right, right, right.
And I don't know, you know.
But we need to see that. We need to see that.
We do, but he needs to see it first.
Sure.
We got to switch to another topic of more ignorance, unfortunately. But
shocking.
This, I know. It's shocking and very rich, too, the guy is. We're going to talk about Joe Rogan in our next segment. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, joined today by Ken Akers, LaShawn Williams, and Molly Bonner. Okay, we are going to switch a little bit, and it's kind of like a detour, not even a sharp turn, because we're still back in the racist part. And today, LaShawn is wearing a shirt that says, slap your local racist. We all should own one of those.
Which I'm going to pick you up.
we may have to find it somewhere, because I don't get what it is.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan is an interesting character. I remember him on a show years ago. It was called Fear Factor.
Fear Factor.
And people did really weird stuff for $50,000, which, by the way, not a lot of money.
Mm.
$50,000 won't change my life. Mm. I don't understand why anybody would eat bugs for that. That's one thing. And he was a comedian. But I learned about him because I'm a UFC fan. So I watch MMA, and he's very good at that. And actually, he's a black belt in a couple of different disciplines, so he knows what he's talking about. However, he got a podcast years ago that got a following, so much so that Spotify paid him $100 million last year to do his podcast. So, as you would imagine, he don't work for money no more. And that's money he's going to get no matter what, because he has millions of people listening to him. But if you listen to his podcast, sometimes he can be quite obtuse, and other times he can be quite ignorant. But I didn't know this, but there was a mashup of him over the years, and this was many years ago, by the way. This is over a decade ago. But it was very regular. On the regular, he's dropping the N-word. I mean, like, if you listen to it, Google Joe Rogan N-word, and you'll find it. You cannot believe he kept saying it over and over. And first of all, nobody talked about it.
Mind you, this is the hard R.
Oh, no, I know. He's not us, so he's doing his thing. But the whole point is that it was just so ridiculously, it just fell out of his mouth all the time. Somebody finally hears this, and then he has to apologize. Now, this is after he apologized for saying a bunch of other crazy stuff about COVID, because he's been putting his foot in his mouth about that for months now, and even after he got it, he kept being silly. So I want to ask you guys, have you heard it?
I have.
LaShawn, you've heard it? Mm-hmm. And you have not heard it. Okay, Ken. I can't play it here because we ain't saying that.
No, I've watched it.
It's a non-N-word zone. So, Molly, I'm going to start with you. When you first heard how much he had said it, what were your thoughts?
Okay, so I feel guilty about my thoughts. Uh-oh. Because I felt like, oh, no, not Joe. I love Joe. Oh, man, he's a good dude.
Yeah.
And then that made me think, man, why is that the first reaction that we give when a white person does something terrible?
Ooh.
They're a good guy.
But
that's what comes out. But if a black person does nothing and something happens to him, we find the dirt on him.
I
feel guilty that right away my reaction was not the pain that it's causing black people, but like, oh, not Joe. He's a good guy. And so I hate that was my initial reaction. And then I hate that it's not going to change anything.
Because
the people that listen to him are listening because he does that.
Yep.
So they put he set the tone, you know, because what's happening now is amongst, you know, a lot of the white folks, they're saying, well, why can't we say it too?
And the answer always is the same reason if I got a sibling and the guy next door calls him an a-hole, we got a problem.
Right.
Just because he heard me say it don't mean you got the right to say it, right? Because there's a familiarity that allows people who know themselves and each other better to say things that you can't otherwise say. It's rude when somebody else says it. It may be rude when I say it, but it's offensive when you say it.
Right. But you're talking about a face-to-face manner, though, too.
I'm talking about at all, man. I don't call women, you know, the B word.
I don't drop
the N word. You know, I could. And in fact, until I was in high school, I did. But that was 40 years ago. That don't come out of my mouth no more.
Right.
Because I know better, and I know why. And so when I hear people make that, and I know you didn't say this, but when I hear white people, or any non-black person say, well, y'all say it. I'm like, well, that's because we say it. Don't mean you could say it. And if you were in a certain circumstance, you would know better than to say it. Because if you go to South Central saying that, you won't have no teeth.
Look, man, I spent my time in the military. You know, I grew up here in Salt Lake. And by the time I got in the military, that was a thing. A lot of the fellas were saying the word. You know, they was just talking amongst each other.
All races?
Yeah, all races. Everybody was saying it. But I mean, I grew up here in Utah, and I heard that as a child, you know, from a lot of white kids. So I disowned that word from jump, you know. So for me getting in the military, you know, I didn't appreciate it being said by anybody.
I'm surprised that the military allowed that to, proffer. I mean, how is it that either non-commissioned or commissioned officers being around that wouldn't say, hey, that's a no-go?
Well, you get fellas. You know, it's just like football team. You know, you get fellas. We can get around each other and say certain things without everybody hearing what's going on.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, there's loose conversations that happen.
Interesting.
But, I mean, you know, in those circumstances, it was never in a position, you know, for me. So if I hear it in any sense, you know, I don't agree with it whatsoever.
Well, Sean, you have children.
I do.
What do you tell them about the whole idea of using an N-word?
Well, I have to come at it from the position of a professor who discusses language and its usage thereof. My children have a different experience because they're very, very, very light, but they know that they are very, very, very black. Mm. And so they're at an age right now developmentally where we're talking about it. So I have a teenager and I have a tween. And so we're talking about use of language in the school setting, but also at home. And I try and keep every conversation on the table. And so my oldest actually had an experience where a child at school said to my kid, oh, that N-word feisty. And I understood the kid was saying it as a slang and how the kids use it as like the hip hop pronoun. My child heard and was like, he called me the N-word. So then they all reported to the principal. Now, what happened to me, I go to the school. I was like, hey, let's have a conversation. So, and the principal said to me, well, you know that your kids don't really look black. And I was like, but my children know that they are black.
And your kids know that they're black too.
Very much so. My children know that they're black, right. And they know that non-black people do not use that word with them. So it does not matter what my child looks like to you. My child knows who they are, and they will not be called the N-word by this other person of color. So of course, when the other parents got brought in, we're people of color too. We don't understand why our child would say that kind of a word. And I'm like, it's because y'all are all socialized to do it. And you want to say it, but you don't want the consequences that come when somebody holds you accountable for saying it.
What I don't like is the idea that the educator, the administrator says, your kids don't look black.
Right.
First of all, you should be pissed that anybody said it in your school, no matter what color anybody is.
Why did he have to identify? That's my problem.
That is totally different. That is completely irrelevant to this conversation.
It is, but it speaks to the fact that people do not register the information without phenotypes.
Okay,
if somebody doesn't, I know, I'm sorry, I'm using my SAT words. I know. If someone doesn't have, you know, brown, black skin, just the typical features of a black person, my kids are very light. They're very, like, white presenting, if you will. But my kids know that they're black.
Are they lighter than you?
Right.
Yes.
Oh, because you don't present as a white person.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. But I'm not the darkest sister in the room either, and I have to accept that.
You're looking at me.
Look, I'm just saying.
I mean, we're the last people to be talking about this.
You're right. My kids, though.
It's always light skins, man.
It's always light skin behavior. You can't. It's shady and it's difficult. But my kids know who they are. And I've made it a point to make sure I said, listen, you will have a different walk in this world because you can see both sides. You will be in conversations and folks will not know you are black until you tell them. You still have a responsibility to interrupt, to disrupt, and to correct. And so it's a different burden for my kids. But it just shows you that educators are not primed to not even just recognize the word. They say, I have to see a black person for the word to matter. That's how they make the connection. Without seeing a black person, the word, it's just what kids say.
So, Molly, you're in music.
Yes.
You got to know that, especially in the hip-hop culture, people throw it around all the time.
Yeah.
And I still feel like, in 1 minute, that it is not – we have to stand up and say, you can't say that. I mean, as a person in music, have you had to deal with that?
Here's the thing. I don't feel that way.
Really?
I don't say the word, but
– educate.
So I don't say the word, but, coming up and being in black neighborhoods and talking to my black people, it's endearment. It's jokes. It is love. It feels nothing less than that. It only means that we're that close.
But have you heard it from somebody that's not black?
No, of course. So I personally don't use it, but I don't use it because I don't want there to ever be a question for a white person to use it and think, well, you said it.
See, and that's the thing where I'm at with
the two. I'm not going to tell my people for me.
That's where I'm at with the two. I mean, so my feeling on that, because we have this lateral transition stage with this word, right? So folks are using the word and then folks are not agreeing with the word. If I heard folks using the word, I would still grind my teeth over it. You know, just the way that it positions. But I mean, in that context that you had described it, I mean, I could see that, you know. But I mean, for me, It's not flying.
When we come back, I'll let you go. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I can wait.
You got to start because Joe Rogan apologized. And actually, one of the better apologies I've ever heard. However, he still started a ball rolling that is hard to get stopping. That momentum is going now. We'll continue our discussion when we come back, starting now with Professor Williams over there. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Liebeck with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, speaking today with Ken Akers, LaShawn Williams, and Molly Bonner. We are talking about language, its impact, and as it relates here, race in language, because we started out with Brad Wilcox, who is a leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, making somewhat, I would describe as disparaging remarks and using disparaging language to explain a situation which he only dug himself a hole in. And then Joe Rogan, who apparently just thought N-word in the 2000s was a thing, you know, because he was dropping it every show, it so it seemed. But he did come back with what I thought was a pretty sincere apology, owning up to the fact that he did use it a lot. He did try to act like this mashup was taking stuff out of context, but I'm like, nah, dude, if you said it that much, there's not a whole lot of context going on with that, because that's not a word you would use in everyday language, and there are over a dozen examples of you using it, so it was something that came out of your mouth. But he did say he doesn't use it anymore, and he said it was stupid and ignorant. Okay, I'm good with that. That's owning his mistake. Not everybody does that. And LaShawn, before I rudely cut you off, you were going to explain, you know, kind of as Ken was talking, you know, we all feel a certain way about things, and we address them as we know how, whether it's language coming from another black person or a person who is not of color. It can be dicey. You have to kind of navigate those waters while you're in them. But I do feel like in my life, as I've been able to learn what language to use and what language not to use, and who in front of who I can. I don't curse in front of my mother, and I'm 50 years old. I can do whatever I want, but I don't, because that's respectful. The same way I don't want to hear a white person say, well, black people say it all the time. That doesn't mean you should do it. And it certainly isn't respectful, no matter how you carve it up. But Professor.
So in his apology, he clarified when he was using the word, and he talked about how he discussed Red Fox and a couple of other black comedians that used the word profusely. Richard Pryor made it the title of his album. He sure did. Right. He did, right? And so he's talking about how he was using the word while discussing these things. Now, am I interested enough in the conversation to go back and listen to the podcast to understand? No, I am not. The difficulty is this. He said, this was way back in 2011. Let's talk about who was president of the United States in 2011. Would you have had that conversation in front of President and Mrs. Obama?
No, not at all.
Unless you are, what is Larry's last name?
King?
No. Larry Wilmore.
Oh, Larry Wilmore.
Who I love, but made the most grievous error in the history of grievous errors to me.
Truly.
Right.
When he dropped the N-word with the president.
Yes. Right. So what you're looking at is someone saying, I used it in this context to have this conversation. Okay. What I would love to see is, instead of Joe apologizing, I want to see him analyze himself. What was going on for you that it made sense that you were trying to have this conversation? And what do you know better about yourself now that you will no longer have those kinds of conversations?
And not only when he figures that out, he's got an obligation and duty at this point to let other people know how to fix that same issue, because he's just impregnated this idea amongst how many?
And let me speak to that very quickly, because I was thinking about this as we were going to talk about it, right? And I said, if he's going to analyze and he's going to actually do work to repair this, if that happened 10, 12 years ago, 12 years in, Joe, 12 years out. Right. For the next 12 years, I want you to fix this. Mm. And I want every single podcast episode to be about you fixing this error. Well, when will it be enough? If it was enough for you to go through it 12 years, you can give me another 12.
Right.
You can go ahead, make $100 million doing that, and then donate it to all the black people.
But now we're talking about moral obligation now.
Financial obligation.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we hold people morally accountable for mistakes?
They have to have morals.
Right.
You got to start with that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not everybody has them.
Right. And what we're doing right now in today's day and age, we're just tossing a apology letter at it with no morality behind it.
Well, I mean, okay. So then you ask yourself, what do you expect as the apology? So and I want to go back to I didn't say this about Wilcox, and I'm going to use it now to a degree. See, part of the reason I don't use the N-word is because I think it's dehumanizing, right?
Right.
That's how it was used against us when we came over here on slave ships, right?
Right about that.
So that's all I hear. I know what you say, Molly, and as a person who used it, I get the familial kind of language you could use that in. However, I still think of it as dehumanizing first and foremost. And so I don't want to hear it coming from nobody's mouth, really.
Right, right, right.
Just because I don't think that way of other human beings.
Right.
And when you use that kind of language, when you call us the blacks, that is, again, othering, dehumanizing us. Joe Rogan, I don't think he thinks we're not human.
Planet of the Apes.
Well, he did. Okay.
Ooh,
fair enough.
I was going to go there.
But
again,
here's the thing. I'm saying to you that his words would say that he does. But I think in his heart of hearts, I would like to believe he has evolved. Did I just say evolution with apes? So if he has gotten better, evolved, since he said that he got out he went to a black theater and he thought he was in a Planet of the Apes. Again, we can't make this stuff up.
So here we go, though. I mean, let's talk about, we go back, we was talking about Wilcox, where I brought up the superiority complex. He could be sincere. We're all, you know, educated individuals here with a heart. You know, we're having some very heartfelt conversations on the air and off the air, and we're talking to each other with love and compassion. Okay, and that we could feel that from him, right? That's the normal human response, to feel that from him. But it's the language again for me. He's coming from a superiority complex. He's going to feel heartfelt, but he's yet still thinking as a second-class citizen to them.
Here's the thing, though. It's the fact that he's not acknowledging that it was racist. It's
right.
Like you. I mean, I appreciated
right.
the apology, but how hard is it to talk for 8 minutes about what he did and not say that it was racist?
Right.
And I feel like white people in general will do anything to say, I'm not racist.
They don't want, that's the last thing they want to be called.
Right.
When I moved to a white neighborhood, my sophomore year, I moved to Utah for that year. And then mm-hmm. went back to Vegas. Mm-hmm. I went to LA, actually. My sophomore year, Utah, football, I'm running back kicks. And I hear, catch that N-word.
Ooh.
Catch that N-word. And I'm like, are they saying N-word? And I look down.
Come on.
And there's multiple people shouting that to me as I'm running down.
From the sideline,
I look over and it's the opposing coach that's leading that. Catch that N-word, right? And I went to my coach afterwards and like, coach, they're calling me an N-word. Like, I think it was that coach and who else was it? I'm trying to think. He's like, no, listen, son, we're not racist. We are not racist around here. And my point is, mm-hmm. is that they want to be absolved so quickly
right.
that they won't even acknowledge
right.
what they're doing.
Well, again, putting that pedestal, right? When you finally take somebody off that pedestal and you hand them the shovel, they don't know what to do with the shovel, right? They are completely bliss that they got a shovel in their hand. So we're asking, again, when we had talked about this, we're asking somebody to look in the mirror and actually describe yourself.
Yes.
That's what we're asking to do. And there are people, when we see in society, we see these individuals that will finally look in the mirror and they finally realize and they'll finally put some work into play into fixing the matter. Then we know that person is heartfelt and genuine. They got the morality and everything to back with it. But society is forcing these individuals. Okay. That's where we have the uphill battle. That's where we're struggling. And that's why we're having these conversations right now, because we have to force and we have to fight and we have to claw and we have to scratch and we have to get these individuals to, we have to jump around with the mirror and try to get it in front of their face.
It's so funny to me. Like, it must be like a funhouse mirror to them. They're like, that's not even a real
that's
mirror.
Not even
that's
me.
Not even me.
Right. That's not me.
So then what? Is it? So do we cancel?
No. You know what? I don't. Some people deserve canceling, but I don't think this is the case for either of those guys, actually.
So here's my question to that then. What does that mean to not cancel Brad Wilcox?
Hold
does
on.
That mean send him back out?
Well, okay. I'm going to let Professor here. She's waiting.
No, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to say that there are conversations that we have in our mainstream places where Whoopi Goldberg
yep.
was suspended for 2 weeks for something that she said, right? Netflix walked out on Dave Chappelle for his comedy shows,
right,
the fourth
right,
in
right.
his series, right? And I think it's interesting when we talk about canceling, and I have to be so careful about how this is going to be perceived, because I don't want it to be perceived against other marginalized groups. What I want people to understand is that no one ever gets canceled for being racist in ways that we get canceled for being sexist, anti-Semitic, homophobic,
right.
etc.
You can't be anti-Semitic at all.
I mean, think
you
about
can't,
it.
Well, that's
think about
a,
it.
It's tough, and that's the thing. If we're going to cancel, and if we're going to hold folks accountable for their anti-Semitism, for their homophobia, for their transphobia, we've got to hold them accountable for their racism, their sexism, etc. Like, those two are areas where it's hard to get someone canceled. You can even get a lot of men canceled for sexism,
right.
But you can't get people canceled in the same ways for racism. I don't know why that is, or for anti-blackness specifically, right? Because with some other racial groups, people will get canceled over
John
those
Gruden
things.
John Gruden got canceled.
Who?
John Gruden.
Oh, the Raiders
football coach. He's one example.
Yeah.
Yes, one just, example of one. The emails. Right. And he's fighting it.
And it wasn't just black people he talked about.
Yeah.
No, right. He did go over the board.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So we gotta stop this. I love you all. And if I say it again, I love you all. We will do this again. I promise you, because I don't know what to do with myself today. I'm so happy.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for a wonderful conversation. Join us for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at ADonSports and at JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast any of the places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We'd love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.